WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. It's been 2 years since the Supreme Court struck down the constitutional right to an abortion. Afterwards, a series of abortion bans and limits went into place. 14 states now ban abortion altogether. That includes states just over the Illinois border, like Missouri, Indiana, and Kentucky. Iowa and Wisconsin ban abortions late in the second trimester. Meanwhile, Illinois has become even more of a safe haven for people seeking abortion care, except traveling to Illinois for care, that can be expensive. And nationally, legal challenges remain. To hear more, I sat down with Jennifer Welch, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Illinois, and Megan Jaifo, executive director of the Chicago Abortion Fund. I started off by asking Megan what's top of mind for her as we mark 2 years since Roe v. Wade was overturned. Here's Megan.
Oh, I don't want to start crying. A lot of emotions, I think, today. I think the most important thing that I'm holding on to is that we know exactly what we're up against, and we know how to continue to connect people to care by any means necessary. And next month, we will celebrate 5 years of not having to turn a single caller away, despite rapid increases in call counts.
Wow.
And really difficult complexity in getting people moved around the country.
Jennifer, what's on your mind?
Like Megan, I'm keeping our patients front of mind today and honestly every day. In the 2 years since the Dobbs decision, Planned Parenthood of Illinois has welcomed patients from 41 different states.
41.
Yeah, that's right.
It's almost the entire country.
Exactly, exactly. And that tells you how far people are being forced to travel because of these medically unnecessary bans and restrictions on care.
To that end, Megan, I mean, one of the surprising findings is that since Dobbs, the number of abortions in the country increased last year, 2023. How are you wrapping your head around that?
I mean, I look at our teams and I look at the ecosystem of providers, advocates, and elected here in Illinois and what we've accomplished together. And it becomes clear that when you create conditions for people to be able to come to a receiving state to access life-affirming and often life-saving care, that people will come. We know people are not going to stop having abortions. We've had abortions since the beginning of time. I know for myself what my abortions have meant for my life personally. And I think it's through that lens that all of us are working together tirelessly, really in coalition and in a remarkable ecosystem. We've become very close over the last 2 years. Planned Parenthood of Illinois, Planned Parenthood of the St. Louis region, independent clinics, hospitals. Mm-hmm. And we're really willing to do whatever it takes to make sure we can care for the thousands of people forced to come here.
Jennifer, you just talked about the fact that folks are coming from 41 states to Planned Parenthood Illinois. So you've seen this massive increase, it sounds like. Some data suggests some 47%. Is that it? So walk us through the numbers, because that's staggering.
Yeah. Since Dobbs, so in just the last 24 months, Planned Parenthood of Illinois has experienced a 47% increase in abortion care that we provide. And as Megan indicated, that's coming both from in-state and from surrounding states. Well, I said surrounding states, but I should be careful. We know that patients are forced to travel great distances for this care. So it's true that we see a number of patients from Wisconsin, Indiana, Tennessee, and Kentucky, patients mm-hmm. that are close to Illinois, but we've seen a 3-time increase in the number of patients from Texas. So patients traveling, forced to travel all the way here from Texas. And that's where the partnership that Megan mentioned is so important.
Yeah.
Because such a barrier to travel.
How much is that costing folks, Megan?
We just passed the $7 million mark last week. So we
wow.
have spent $7 million. And that doesn't include what we need to pay our staff, who are incredible. I just want to shout out the incredible staff of the Chicago Abortion Fund for the work that they do to get people here and to pay for the appointments. So we don't just pay for wraparound costs. We pay for appointments. And appointment costs can be very expensive and mm-hmm. really prohibit people from being able, they were prohibiting people from being able to access care prior to Roe. So now we're post Roe and we have appointment costs and we also have travel planes. Hotels yeah. in Chicago in the summertime are bananas.
Ooh,
yes.
Expensive.
Gas costs are very expensive. Mm-hmm. Childcare. So $7 million in the last 2 years. And that's up from in 2018, we spent less than $60,000.
Have you seen a change in financial support since Roe v. Wade was overturned?
Yes, absolutely. I think we had a ton of support immediately post-Dobbs, which we're incredibly grateful for. But we are definitely seeing a decline in individual supporters. And
really?
I think the farther, my concern is that the farther this is from the public eye, the farther we get away from it, the less people are able to support us. We have many crises happening in this country, and it's an election year. People are pouring lots of money into ballot initiatives and elections, mm-hmm. which we think is important. But what about people who are being denied abortion care as a result of that? And this is why we need sustained investment in abortion funds to be able to continue to pay for people's needs to get
yeah.
the care.
You're nodding, Jennifer, and I'm thinking more about this conversation on barriers that we've been having. Not only, you know, barriers people are experiencing to getting here to Illinois to access the care, but I mean, also once they're here, are there barriers that they might experience within Illinois?
For sure. One of the problems that we continue to have in our state and many others are fake clinics. Places, they call themselves crisis pregnancy centers. They offer free ultrasound or free pregnancy tests, they actually provide misinformation, medically inaccurate information that is harmful and terrifying to patients. And what we've experienced here in Illinois is these crisis pregnancy centers keep opening up near actual abortion and family planning care providers.
So it's how have you navigated that?
Wow, it's really tough. I have to tell you, at our Carbondale Health Center, they actually put up a sign around the corner and told people, check in here. And some of our patients believed it. I mean, it's a sign. There's a staff person wearing a vest. And so they lured the patient away from our care into the crisis pregnancy center, which was just right around the corner. And so now we warn patients that they might encounter that. We warn them that a Planned Parenthood staff member will greet them in a rainbow vest. We're hoping the opposition doesn't pick up that habit.
And you've also increased the number of staff that you have, right? To sort of help navigate the barriers.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. We have full-time navigators who, like Megan's amazing colleagues, are booking train tickets and plane tickets and lodging and giving gas cards and food cards, as well as subsidizing the care. At Planned Parenthood of Illinois, before Dobbs, we would provide an average of about $200 in patient assistance, and now our average is $500 per patient. So really the expense for all of these barriers to care that mm-hmm. patients have to overcome has grown immensely in these 2 years.
Last year, Governor Pritzker signed a law allowing nurse practitioners and physicians assistants to also perform abortions. How has that helped manage some of the influx?
It's been a great assistance that the law clarified that APNs, advanced practice nurses, could also provide procedural abortion. When we increased the number of health centers at Planned Parenthood of Illinois, opening centers on the border like Waukegan, Flossmoor, Carbondale, that was one way to boost the number of appointments that we could provide. But adding APNs to the professionals that can provide care has really made abortion a little bit more accessible for everybody in Illinois and the people forced to travel.
So when you think about the future, Megan, what comes to mind? Big smile. Is it a hopeful smile?
I think it's a mix. I mean, I think today, I do feel hopeful today. I wasn't sure how I was going to feel. You know, I went to sleep last night. You know that this big anniversary is happening. And I recall 2 years ago, just the fear. I think I felt we had two full-time staff that managed our hotline and two other staff, a total of four full-time staff. And now we have 19 with three new hires on the way. So I feel like we are equipped to continue our work. So I'm hopeful in that regard. But I know this is going to be a very long fight, that there are more restrictions and more bans on the way. Florida's ban that went into effect May 1st, I don't think we've begun to see the real true effects of. And we know that Florida was second behind Illinois in the highest increase of abortions performed in that state post-Dobbs. And that when you look at a map, it seems wild to say that Illinois is going to be the best place for care for many of those people in the Deep South who were depending on Florida and Floridians, and even people coming from out of the country, from the Caribbean, from Central America, to access care.
Wow.
The fact that Illinois is the epicenter that we are, I think it speaks to our strengths as a community of people so concerned about this, but I'm also deeply concerned about how do we sustain it.
That is Megan Jaifo, Executive Director of the Chicago Abortion Fund, and Jennifer Welch, President and CEO of Planned Parenthood Illinois. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now let's turn to Stephen Schwinn, who's a constitutional law expert and professor at the University of Illinois Chicago School of Law. Welcome back.
Sasha, so good to be with you.
You have been listening along to my conversation with Jennifer and Megan. Your thoughts on what you've heard?
Well, so I'm encouraged that Illinois is on the forefront of protecting a woman's right to abortion and abortion care, and protecting service providers who are providing abortion and reproductive health services to women who are coming from out of state, on the one hand. On the other hand, as we've heard, it's a real tragedy that women have to travel the distances that they do and incur the costs that they do and the hardships that they do to get this kind of abortion care.
Medication abortions have allowed providers to meet demand as well as expand access. But the fight over the legality of mifepristone has really been heated. Mifepristone, of course, you know, being a key abortion medication. So where are we at now?
So, Sasha, the Supreme Court ruled recently that plaintiffs lacked what we call standing to challenge the FDA's approval of mifepristone and the FDA's relaxation of rules and regulations to gain access to the drug, which means that mifepristone continues to be on the market along with a second drug in a two-drug regimen to induce what we call a medication abortion. Now, this is probably not the end of the case. States now have moved to intervene in this case and have sued on their own to challenge the FDA's relaxation of those rules and regulations to gain access to mifepristone. And if the states have standing to move forward in these lawsuits, this is a case that very well could go back to the Supreme Court, and the court could get to the merits of the case to determine whether the FDA actually properly relaxed the access rules and regulations.
Okay, well, we're still waiting for the Supreme Court to rule in a case about abortion that could protect the health of a pregnant person. Fill us in on that case from Idaho.
So this is a really important case, but it's also a somewhat complicated one. It involves a federal law called EMTALA, the Emergency Medical Labor and Treatment Act of 1986. Now, what this federal law says is that any hospitals who are receiving Medicare funding, which is to say almost all hospitals, that they have to provide necessary stabilization to patients who come in on an emergency basis, okay? So what the Biden administration has said is this necessary stabilization includes abortion care for women who are facing medical crises, who come in on an emergency basis, okay? Now that, the Biden administration says, conflicts with an Idaho law that bans abortion except in the case of saving the life of the woman. And what the Biden administration is saying is that EMTALA requires doctors, in Medicare hospitals in Idaho to provide abortion care in certain instances where the Idaho law would prohibit it. And in that way, EMTALA clashes with the Idaho law.
Right.
And what the Biden administration is saying is that the EMTALA law, the federal law, preempts the Idaho law in those situations where women come into the emergency room and need abortion care mm-hmm. as part of their treatment.
Quote unquote, fetal personhood is on the table in this case. How so? And what would it do?
Well, so fetal personhood is related to this case, and it's related to a whole other set of cases involving in vitro fertilization, which we can talk about. But the idea here is that a fetus is a person at the point of conception, and that the fetus's so-called life is protectable as much as the woman's life is protectable. And the judgment that the Idaho legislature has made is that when the woman's life is at danger, it's the woman's life that will prevail, and that the woman then can get an abortion. Now, the problem with that is that doctors are having to wait until literally a woman's life is threatened before they can provide abortion care, which means that women in Idaho and other states that have similar restrictions are suffering grave medical harm short of death before they're able to get an abortion.
So what do you make with your legal expertise of the arguments that are being made in this case?
So this is really complicated. When we listened to the oral arguments at the Supreme Court just this spring, we heard justices that were really concerned with all kinds of different aspects of the case. There was a lot of concern about what I just talked about, women coming to the emergency room and suffering grave medical harm before they're able to get an abortion.
Right.
But there were also some more technical concerns about whether the federal government, through its spending authority, can override a state's criminal law. The court hasn't said that before, and so that would be a new and novel thing, at mm-hmm. least according to some of the justices' reckoning. And so it's that technical piece of the case that worries me a little bit, that could basically keep the Idaho law in place, even notwithstanding EMTALA.
Interesting. There's been some concern that the political right would come after people's access to contraception now that Roe's been overturned. Now, we saw efforts to legally protect people's right to contraception introduced in Congress. It passed the House, but failed in the Senate. Do you anticipate future legal challenges seeking to sort of limit access to contraception?
So, yes, I see in the future that states are going to move to limit access to contraception.
So it's not over.
I don't think this one's over, Sasha, not by a long shot. And remember, back in Dobbs, just 2 years ago, when the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade, you had that concurring opinion by Justice Thomas that said, look, you know, the idea of contraception being a fundamental right, that's on the table too. And we might see the Supreme Court at some point in the future say that contraception is not a fundamental right. And at that point, we open the floodgates to state restrictions on contraception.
What are you going to keep your eye on moving forward?
Well, the EMTALA case is a big one. Mm-hmm. What's going on in the IVF world in the wake of the Alabama fiasco is another thing that I'm keeping my eye on. The elections in 2024 is huge because mm-hmm. if the Republicans come into power, many of them have stated that they're going to enforce the Comstock Act with full force. So there's that. But we also have a lot of ballot initiatives that may be on as many as 10 to 12 ballots in the 2024 elections. And of the ballot initiatives that we've seen so far, six of them, they've all gone toward pro-choice. And so if that trend continues, the elections could have a lot to say about abortion care going forward.
That's Stephen Schwinn, a constitutional law expert and professor at the University of Illinois Chicago School of Law. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sasha.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Meha Ahmed. For a full archive of our conversations, head over to wbez.org/reset. We cover the news that you need to know and the Chicago history and culture that you don't want to miss. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again tomorrow.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.